Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Things have gotten so bad inside Iraq, from the standpoint of the Iraqi people, my belief is we will, in fact, be greeted as liberators.
Dick Cheney on Meet the Press just over 5 years ago. It was 5 years Wednesday that the Iraq War began. And today, is the surge creating a stalemate? We asked that question as Vice President Cheney and Senator John McCain have both showed up in Baghdad in unannounced visits to mark the anniversary. You will hear this week some of the top line numbers repeated over and over again, about 4,000 Americans dead, tens of thousands to more than 100 or hundreds of thousands of Iraqis dead, depending on who you believe, costs in the trillions. But we want to look at the immediate state of Iraq at the fifth anniversary. New York Times Baghdad correspondent James Glanz the other day described the surge as resulting in a kind of stalemate. Now, that's not the simple troop surge is working analysis that we've mostly heard for the last 6 months and that has somewhat neutralized the Iraq war for the moment as a presidential campaign issue. So with me now, we have James Glanz, the Iraq bureau chief for the New York Times, who is in Baghdad, and Bobby Ghosh, the former Baghdad bureau chief for Time magazine, currently serving as their world editor, but he is back in Baghdad at this time. So Bobby Ghosh, James Glanz, welcome to WNYC today. Hello.
Hi, good to be here.
James Glanz, what did you mean when you used the word stalemate in your article the other day?
Well, I was referring to specifically probably our best measure of the effect of the surge on the security situation here. That's a running count, a daily count of attacks on American Iraqi forces, Iraqi civilians, that the Pentagon has been keeping since the very first days of the war, and these numbers are declassified periodically by the Government Accountability Office, and we got a couple of more months declassified the other day. And what we saw was that, as everyone knows, since about the beginning or middle of 2007, the number of attacks per day has been going down. That's a measure of the improvement in the security situation here, but that drop hit a wall. It looks like around November, December of last year, the numbers have stayed kind of steady, and I referred to that as a kind of a stalemate in the article, meaning that no further progress has been seen on that by that measure in the last few months.
And your article describes violence as widespread last week throughout the country. Give us a sense of the scope.
Well, on our, you know, we track violence in a number of different ways. One is the statistical way that you and I just discussed, but then we follow individual incidents from day to day. It's very hard to project trends from what's happening on any given day because it's like looking at a pointillist painting too close. You know, you see things in such a grainy way. But as we were putting together that piece, we've had a number of, I think, more than a dozen American soldiers killed in the last roughly a week. I don't have the exact number here, but it's substantial. And we've had attacks of a pretty good scale breaking out all around the country from north to south, certainly in Baghdad. Maybe Anbar Desert is one exception, still quiet out there. So anecdotally, you see that Iraqis are starting to feel that the number of attacks has picked up, and then you also see these numbers sort of coming to a halt in terms of the improvements, and people are starting to wonder, does that mean things are going to turn around? We're not at that conclusion yet, but that question is out there.
Just reading from your article from Friday, it said in the, March 12th, which would have been Wednesday, in the deadliest of those attacks, a roadside bomb between the southeast cities of Nasiriyah and Basra struck a bus full of Iraqi civilians, killing at least 16 and wounding 22. Iraqi police officials said, but the Iraqi security forces also reported deadly attacks in Hilla, Karbala, Bakuba, Mosul, Kut, Baghdad, and Dulia, just north of the capital. Bobby Ghosh, you were on with us once a week last June when you were the Baghdad bureau chief for Time magazine. Then after years of duty since the very beginning of the war, you moved to New York to work for Time. What are you doing back in Baghdad today?
Well, I've been away for about 6 months, Brian, and I've been, like you and others, been following the surge in statistical terms, watching the figures. But I wanted to come back and feel for myself, if I could, the impact of the surge, to take soundings of what's going on in Baghdad, to meet friends and be part of the office again.
And your article on Time is headlined, "Back to Baghdad, Hell Reassessed." Start reassessing for us. You describe here some of the differences that you found from when you left 6 months ago.
Well, there are some clear improvements in terms of what a foreign correspondent can do in Baghdad. I've been able, since I've been back, to travel a little more freely than before, taking plenty of precautions, of course, but I've been able to go to neighborhoods that I haven't visited in nearly 2 years. The ride in from the airport is a lot feels a lot less dangerous than it used to be. But these are sort of surface impressions. There's still plenty going on under the surface and beyond the scope of statistics that is worrisome. I've been meeting old friends and contacts and colleagues, and what I'm hearing from them is much more disturbing. And I think just anecdotally, they seem to bear out what Jim's story says, that after the fall of 2007, things have stopped getting better, and in some measure have receded a little bit. I think it's indicative that people are still leaving this country in sizable numbers. Even among my small office here, colleagues have been moving their families out of Iraq for fear of their safety. So it's a bit of a mixed picture. Things are better than they were 12 months ago, but then. 12 months ago, things were really very, very bad. And the improvements, it's far from certain that these improvements are sustainable.
Better than they were 12 months ago, better than they were 6 months ago. But James Glanz, according to your article and the assessment by the government that you cited, really not any better than 3 or 4 months ago. Do you think that the generals are assessing now what needs to be done militarily in order to take the surge to the next level of success and not let it bog down in what might be characterized as a stalemate?
Well, it's hard to say what they can do further on the military front. I mean, I'm sure they want to sustain the gains that they've achieved, but I really think that their concern now is more with political, sectarian, social reconciliation, because unless you take care of the underlying forces that have always been at work here, and we really don't see that much evidence that those forces have changed all that much, you can't sustain this. As Bobby just said, you know, there's a feeling that really things in some fundamental way are still the same until you get that, you've been talking about the Irish all day. I have half my genome is Irish, so I want to say Éireann Go Breá here, but as in Northern Ireland, you know, at a certain point you felt like people were ready for it to be over and you had a kind of reconciliation, and you don't really feel that way here yet. I mean, you see it around, maybe some indications around the edges it could happen and maybe it will happen, but it certainly hasn't happened yet.
Well, it was interesting to me that General Petraeus just the other day decided to speak out and say that Iraqi leaders have failed to take advantage of the reduction in violence that the surge has provided to make adequate progress toward resolving their major political differences. But we had heard President Bush start to put out the word that those benchmarks, those big political benchmarks that we heard about at the beginning of the surge, were irrelevant now, because what the surge was creating was all these local peace treaties, in effect, and local conditions for peace all around the country. But now Petraeus is speaking out against Baghdad for not using the opportunity to come to big political reconciliations. Bobby Ghosh, what do you make of Petraeus speaking out right now, and what does that do to the administration's argument that those benchmarks are meaningless?
Well, General Petraeus, as I understand it, is backing away from those comments now. But they make perfectly good sense to me. Whether or not he made them, that is certainly how most of us here feel about it, and I know that that is certainly how many in the military, in the high echelons, feel about it. Yes, there have been some local agreements between communities in some parts of the country, and they're successful and they're remarkable, and they should be noted, perhaps celebrated in some degree. But they are by their very nature very limited. There is a fixed timeline to them, and we're coming, I suspect, very close to the end of that timeline. The big picture remains unchanged, as Jim again pointed out. There has not been a great deal of reconciliation in Baghdad. Many of the benchmarks that were set a year ago, President Bush was right in saying that they no longer make any sense, but not for the reasons that he's been suggesting. They no longer make any sense because they've come too late to be of any significant use to the community. I find in Baghdad there are still deep divisions between Shiites and Sunnis, between neighborhoods, between neighbors. And that is the fact that there hasn't been a lot of improvement there means that things could go back to where they were a couple of years ago when neighbor was killing neighbor in the city. And that is something that worries me a lot.
We have a few minutes for phone calls. If anybody wants to take this opportunity to have a direct line to Baghdad, for Bobby Ghosh, the longtime Baghdad bureau chief for Time, now their world editor, and James Glanz, the current Iraq bureau chief for the New York Times, our phone number 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Give us a call, or you can post a comment or a question to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer's show. We'll start taking some of your calls and comments when we continue in a minute, and we will also find out what John McCain and Dick Cheney are doing in Iraq now that they have both arrived for unannounced visits. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and you can see video clips from some of our recent segments, including Rutgers women's basketball coach Vivian Stringer a year after IMUS, and New York Philharmonic conductor Lauren Mazel on his trip to North Korea. When they were in our studios, we videotaped both of those interviews. That and much more video at WNYC.org. Click on video. We are talking about Iraq 5 years after the war began. It was 5 years ago Wednesday. As I mentioned before the break, John McCain and Dick Cheney, Senator McCain, the Republican nominee, presumably, and, of course, the vice president, have made unannounced visits to Iraq. On ABC Good Morning America today, McCain was asked what he meant when he said we could be in Iraq for 100 years as far as he's concerned.
No, when I said 100 years, it was obviously after the war is over. After wars are over, we most of the time have a military presence there. And, of course, I understand politics, but that was very, very misconstrued when I said that. I still mean it. We could have a presence here for many years. We've been in Germany for 60 years. But the point is that if we can reduce and eliminate American casualties, Americans will be satisfied with American presence here. Senator Obama and Senator Clinton said the surge would never work. It's worked. Now they say that they can't function politically. They're functioning politically, very poorly, two steps forward and one step back.
James Glanz, Iraq bureau chief for the New York Times. James, what is Senator McCain, what is Vice President Cheney doing in Iraq today? Do you know?
Well, much of their schedule has been kept, sort of unknown to us, they say, for security reasons. In fact, last night, my colleague Rich Appel was scrambling around to write a story about it, and we really couldn't get many details except that he was having dinner with the ambassador. It's not much to put in your lead, but that's about all we had. Today, we saw from some of the footage that Senator McCain went to Haditha, which is up in the Euphrates River Valley, most in the news because of shootings by a Marine group there that's still being working its way through the military courts. but also the site of some of the security improvements that we've been talking about. And we saw footage of the senator shopping in local markets and things like that, walking through the streets. We don't have much on Vice President Cheney's itinerary at this point. We understand he's here with his wife and his daughter.
Bobby Ghosh, anything on that?
No, we've been kept pretty much in the dark as well. There's been very little, even in the Iraqi media, about these visits. And frankly, just in an unscientific poll conducted by myself and my colleagues among the Iraqis we've spoken to today, very few people here seem to care one way or the other whether John McCain and Vice President Cheney are in town. They don't expect anything substantive to come out of these trips.
Tom in Chappaqua, you're on WNYC. Hello, Tom.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. My question is that how much of the relative calm versus 6 months ago in Baghdad today or other parts of Iraq is the result of the ethnic cleansing, secular violence that took place last year? And if that's the case, how sustainable are those, you know, ethnic enclaves?
James, you want to take that?
Sure. Yeah, there's a whole host of different factors, we think, that have gone into the relative calm on the streets. I thought there's a helicopter going overhead. I apologize if it's loud for a moment. You know, one, for example, is some of the tribes that have decided not to fight the United States, but to work with American troops and making neighborhoods safer. Part of it is the surge. And then a question in our minds, just as in the caller's mind, is how important has the fact that neighborhoods formerly mixed are not mixed now, that there's nobody there to fight each other. You know, it'll be all Sunni or all Shia. And I do think that that's part of what's happened. But at the same time, we also see that in some neighborhoods, the displacement in Iraq is so complex, where people move from house to house to house to house, that there's also been a remixing in many places. And it's not, I don't think it's just that they're all segregated by sect. I think there's also a real sort of a truce, in a sense, going on among some of the sectarian groups right now, an agreement that now is not the time to fight. For example, Muqtada al-Sadr's Mahdi army is in a sort of a ceasefire mode, and they've held that mode. So it's one of the factors. I don't think that it's the exclusive factor.
Harvey in Mamaroneck, you're on WNYC. Hello, Harvey.
Hi. The question I had was just answered. I was concerned, you know, how much is the fact that Bani Sadr has had a low profile, and if he decides that he wants to pursue his Shiite agenda again, isn't the whole thing going to erupt?
You mean Muqtada al-Sadr, who has a ceasefire? Well, Bobby Ghosh, you want to take that?
Yes, I think Muqtada al-Sadr has positioned himself perfectly. He is getting some credit for the reduction in violence, but he continues to hold his army. His army has not laid down their weapons. He has positions in the government, and he's able to portray himself as the outsider at the same time. So he remains the ingredient X in all of this, and he's put himself in a position where he could go any way, and judging by his history, he responds to the street and the sense among Shiite, particularly the dispossessed and poor sections of the Shiite population. Right now, those people seem to think that they have the political upper hand, and they're willing to hold back on committing violence against the Sunnis. If that mood changes, then I suspect that so too will Muqtada al-Sadr's positioning.
Mason in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Mason.
Yeah, hello. I'm going to say that there was an article in New York Times today about how that disbanding the Iraqi army was a mistake or a blunder. And I also had a coworker who served in the army in Iraq, and when he came back, I told him that American troops, what was his perspective, were American troops going to be there another 5-10 years? He said longer, because the army pretty much disintegrated along with the police force. And I'd like to know, is I heard some Iraqi officials say that on your program that the American troops will be there till 2018. What's the present status of the situation? Are we going to be there in force? Because the surge apparently has worked in some ways, but American troops are paying an awful toll on it.
Well, it's a great question to look that far into the future, because James Glantz, when Senator McCain talks about staying in Iraq, he puts it mostly in terms of the need to make sure that Al-Qaeda doesn't have a permanent safe haven there. Even Clinton and Obama, when they talk about getting out of Iraq, quickly they talk about going back in if the strength of Al-Qaeda warrants it as a potential national security threat to the United States. So what conditions could there be in anything we would call short or medium term that would be controlled enough and controlled by Baghdad enough to not allow Al-Qaeda to have a safe haven?
Yeah, well, it's a great question. I mean, if imponderable number one in Iraq is political and sectarian reconciliation, I would say number two is will the security forces, the Iraqi security forces, be able to take over in some measure from the United States troops in any reasonable time frame? And, you know, unfortunately, I don't think we know the answer to that question. We've seen provinces nominally handed over to Iraqi security forces control, when in fact, if you go and check it out, it's often true that the Americans are still there really running things. And we've seen many, many claims about the efficiency and the good training of the Iraqi security forces that don't turn out to be correct. On the other hand, they're better than they used to be. And remember last time I was back in the States, I did a piece where we looked at the Korean forces after the Korean War, and if you look back, a lot of the same criticisms were leveled at the Korean Army as they sort of made themselves up from scratch in the South, and eventually, you know, they got pretty good. So I don't think that the book has been written on that, but certainly that's going to be another condition, one whose outcome we don't know, for United States troops to pull out.
Bobby Ghosh, we have a minute left. Why don't you take the same question?
Well, if the Iraqis have any say in the matter, I think you'll find that the majority of Iraqis would like the Americans to leave right away. In fact, there's a poll out today by Channel 4 of Britain. They surveyed 4,000 Iraqis from all over the country, and 70% of them said they thought the multinational forces should withdraw.
But I've heard an interpretation. We just have 20 seconds, but I've heard an interpretation that says, sure, that's what they say to public pollsters, but really people want the United States to stay until there's more stability. Is that your impression?
Well, that depends who the people are and which part of the country you go to. I think if you go to the South, where the majority of the people live, you'll find that more and more people there want the U.S. to leave.
Bobby Ghosh, Time Magazine World Editor, formerly the Baghdad Bureau Chief, James Glantz, currently Iraq Bureau Chief for the New York Times. Thank you both very much for coming on with us.
Thanks, Brian.
And that's it for today's program. Our executive producer, Nuala McGovern, with producers Lisa Allison, Kate Hines, Jody Abergun, Jason Cowett at the audio controls. I'll be back with Leonard Lopate at 1 o'clock for the swearing-in of David Paterson as governor of New York. I'm Brian Lehrer.